Paul, we're talking about a 107-hour pilot, so barely more than a student in many ways. How much sightseeing can this pilot really do alone, first time flying up the Hudson or the East River, as you suggest? I mean, is it worth it when they can't really spend time looking out the window just to make sure they don't screw this up?
What's he looking at, the glass panel? There's two rivers to follow, so it's nothing but sightseeing. Follow the river, don't hit the bridges and buildings. And to do that, you're looking out the window. You're doing nothing but looking out the window and holding whatever altitude you're supposed to look at, and maybe an occasional glance at a panel to see if there are any ADS-B targets, but I wouldn't even be doing much of that. It is a purely visual experience.
Bob, you said that you're choosing option two for this pilot, mind you. So why do you think this pilot should just deal with flying through the Class Bravo, nothing more complicated, on this first shot across New York?
Jeff, this is a Cessna 152, most likely has limited equipment. Option one, go over the Class Bravo at 7,500. That is fraught with problems because of the potential ceiling problem as the pilot proceeds over the Bravo. Option five, following the coastline at or below 500 feet, that doesn't really appeal to me at all. I think that's foolhardy. You have limited options there, limited glide distance. And yes, I agree, Sandy Hook to Long Island is not a long way, but nevertheless, it is water and it's pretty deep. Option three and four, flying the Hudson River via the Skyline route or the exclusion zone, that requires a lot of attention. The exclusion zone is full of helicopters, or could potentially be full of helicopters crossing the exclusion zone. The Skyline route, you're going to be in contact with ATC to do that, so why not use option two and fly towards New York City at 3,500 and request a clearance? This pilot has already been into Class Bravo at Philadelphia. It's a pretty simple clearance that the pilot will get. He'll be assigned an altitude, and ATC will request a route. Where are you going? And they may tell him direct JFK or direct Deer Park and proceed on course. It's not going to be a really complex clearance. And again, he'll be in contact with ATC there. So by the process of elimination, I pick two.
So if I can just sum that up really quick, basically what it sounds like you're saying is the pilot can sort of break this up here. Get experience dealing with the Bravo through New York, something simple. It'll be boring maybe, as Paul said, but builds the confidence like, okay, I've been through the New York Class Bravo at least once, and maybe something more exciting on the return trip or something like that.
That's exactly the point. The sightseeing business, that should take a backseat to flying the airplane. He's not going on a sightseeing trip here. He needs to fly his airplane and stay on his route.
Catherine.
I like the Skyline route over the Hudson because it combines two things that I think this pilot definitely needs. First of all, a great bucket list item. It's certainly on my bucket list, and I look forward to doing it. But also, this is someone who feels a bit insecure talking to controllers, and the best way to solve that is to talk to controllers.
Bob.
The Skyline route, yeah, that's viable, but the problem is when you get to the north end of the Skyline route, where do you go? There has to be a plan here. You've got Westchester out there.
You go, I'll tell you where you go. You go over Van Cortlandt Park, across Yonkers, and then you go south of Westchester, and you're onto the north shore of Long Island and onto the destination.
Well, this pilot wouldn't know what you're talking about. He would have no clue what that means.
If he briefs locals, he should know. And on the Skyline, if you're talking to controllers, that's what they're going to give you.
Let's look at like the sort of risk here. Paul, you said something really interesting, that the risk between these different scenarios, they don't really even have daylight between them. Let's look at over the water, down low, south of JFK, no higher than 500 feet, versus 1,500 feet or 1,300 feet over the Hudson River between Manhattan and New Jersey, right? Like, is there any appreciable risk difference there? And what are the risks of those two situations?
I don't see it, because in either of those scenarios, and what are you worried about here? You're worried about an engine out. It's a single engine airplane. Either of those scenarios, you're going in the water. Over the Hudson, there just aren't options. And I've flown that corridor dozens of times saying there must be a place here to practically land this airplane. There isn't. If it's good enough for Sully, it's good enough for me. So I'd take the water. Off of JFK, yeah, you're going to go in the water, unless it's a time of year when the beaches aren't occupied and you could easily land on Rockaway or Jones Beach. And that happens all the time. I've got a long list of incidents of engine out landings there, and also a list of banner guys who go into the water offshore because they lose engines and they survive.
Wally.
Well, I agree with Paul. Probably there's no difference in the risk, but at least I would have two more minutes if I was flying the Hudson route to worry about it, I think. I don't think my heart could take 500 feet off of Jones Beach in a 150.
And yet, down low, you might, off Jones Beach, actually have a chance of making it to something where you could put the airplane down without slamming it into something. Going up the Hudson, are you committing to pulling a Sully and yeah. You know?
Oh, you are, Paul. I agree with Paul.
There are no options up the river.
You better be. I mean, that's what this is about. And if you're absolutely not comfortable with that, then the clearance through the Bravo 5,500 feet is the best, because then you have the option of JFK and LaGuardia. But I'm making the argument that that shouldn't loom largest in your decision-making process, because you have an opportunity here, and it's absolutely about the sightseeing.
Right, and I like the Skyline route simply also as a point that Catherine made. He's working with ATC. He's not getting a Class Bravo clearance. Well, I guess he is, but it's a good opportunity for him to practice on a published route. If he comes up as a very timid-sounding pilot with 107 hours and says, I want to go through the Class Bravo, depending on how busy they are, they may just blow him off, but they'll probably give him this thing, you know?
Does the time of year matter here for anyone? I mean, would you not do this in January, or is it better to do it in August, right? Between the extra banner tow traffic and the extra traffic in the corridor versus, you know, you put it in the water and you've got minutes of survival time at certain points. This is in April. Does that factor in to anyone's decision here? Has that been, is that something you would even consider or recommend this pilot? Or does it just not matter?
It's a risk factor, I think. That's why I recommended the personal flotation devices. So in the winter, the beaches are going to be unoccupied, and they're going to be mostly unoccupied through this time period, April, maybe into May. There won't be many people, so you have the option of a beach landing. The Hudson is the Hudson, no matter what time of year it is. If you go in the Hudson, you're going in the Hudson. You can get close inshore, so you know, you'd be close enough to swim to shore if you had to, but you still do want the flotation. I've done these at night. I wouldn't do the Jones Beach at night, but I've done the Hudson and the East River at night, and it's spectacular, but there's no pretending. There's no risk there.
Let's go a little bit bigger here. This pilot's sort of primary preparation for this was a lot of YouTube videos, right? They talked about it with their instructor. They briefed it a while back, but, you know, they've watched a lot of other people do it. I'm kind of curious whether that counts these days. I mean, you've got just a wealth of information out there, and maybe even to a broader kind of, you know, talking about things you do in the airplane. I could really see somebody being tempted into doing something because they saw it on YouTube, as it were. But on the flip side, there's some awesome videos out there. You're nodding your head, Mark.
Yeah, I think that especially when we talk about the Skyline route and the exclusion, there are so many YouTube videos out there that just takes the fear factor away. You see that it's easy. You can hear the communications going back and forth and realize how simple it is. You know, contact LaGuardia Tower, contact Newark Tower. Here's the frequency. It's just so, it just looks so simple because it really is so simple. I mean, I kind of look at it. I haven't flown it. Actually, my bucket list is to start in Long Island, fly the 500 feet down along Jones Beach, and then come up the corridor. You know, and the more of these I actually see taking place, the less concerned I get about how to do it. the one thing we talked about, the 3500 versus the corridor, and one of the things I like about the Hudson River Skyline route is that it requires planning. You know, the 3500 feet, maybe they'll give it to you, maybe they won't, but you're basically saying to ATC, I'll take whatever you give me. So I'm abdicating my flight planning to you, and the Skyline route really requires planning.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. You know, I'm also wondering here, there are not that many people who are going to fly necessarily the New York airspace, but this is a situation, you know, where the fear of going into the Class Bravo causes pilots to do all sorts of crazy machinations for under, over, around, weather issues, lots of nodding around the table. What kind of is the bigger takeaway here? I mean, what you're saying, Paul, is like, go for it and go for it, you know, to the max, but at least there actually is like something you could study up beforehand. You know, Bob's saying, look, take it in pieces, like get your chops up in the Class Bravo first and build yourself up a little bit at a time. Elaine?
I agree with that. I think if this pilot learned to fly with getting some practice with flight following and flying on the East Coast, he obviously has more experience than I had at 107 hours flying around the Midwest and not having that much experience with a busy ATC airspace. So I would say that pilot like this could handle that. And I'll also point out that for decades, pilots have been flying around without GPS or ADS-B down this corridor with just the chart and talking to ATC. So this is definitely manageable even without that extra training or the benefit of YouTube videos.
I mean, is ADS-B even a help here with all those helicopters flying around, all that traffic above you, and a moving map chart? Elaine, did you want to?
Oh, having said that, with ADS-B, it may be a distraction in a busy airspace. So it's probably even better to ignore it, turn it off, not set your settings so that you're not seeing all these targets on your tablets.
Paul.
Yeah, in this airspace, this is eyes out of the cockpit, because the ADS-B targets are going to be jumbled up on each other. You won't be able to delineate. You have to look outside and see them. And that what's true in the corridor is still true, is you have to be looking for the traffic. If you look for it, you will see it. And there's an organized way of announcing it and proceeding up the river. But to your question about the larger overarching point here is that pilots shouldn't be afraid of Class B. All you can do is barge up to the boundary and tell them what you want and see if you can get it. The worst they can say is go away. But with the exception of Chicago mainly, you're probably going to get some version of what you want. And in New York airspace, I found them to be extremely cooperative. And I just don't remember ever being told to remain clear of the Class B. And that's just a cultural aspect of New York approach N90. They just like working traffic and they're good at it.
Bob?
Just an anecdotal note. We had an airplane at one time where we had a problem with the TCAS system going into New York, and it would come up with a fail. And it turns out we had the thing serviced, and the explanation was that the TCAS, this particular model, could only handle 60 aircraft. When it got more than 60 aircraft, it got confused. It got overwhelmed. So that's the kind of density you could have in this area.
Wally?
I have a question for Paul. The hearing you tell about the East River route was very interesting. That's not charted, is it? It is charted up to the turnaround point.
Yeah,
but
it's
but
not
the part
charted
about LaGuardia and going over LaGuardia.
It's not official like the Skyline is. It's just a version of the clearance that you can get. And I've heard the controllers offer it. It was offered to me. That's how I discovered it. And once I discovered it, that was the only thing I wanted to do, because I used to fly charters up from Atlantic City, and the passengers just loved it.
Oh, that
is an incredible sight. And at night, it's just overwhelming. That was mostly in twins. And what it also makes you realize, which I think many people don't, this is true of all Class B, all the activity is out in the approaches and the departures. There's nothing going on up above, 3,000 feet or 2,000 feet. So you go buzzing over LaGuardia at 1,500 feet, and you see all this activity, and you almost think, wow, am I supposed to be here? it is just really cool to be able to do that.
You know, to what you said, Paul, about pilots having a fear of Mike Fright or in the class Bravo, I think part of it is once you're inside, that's where part of the fear, it's like screwing up and having the stick come down on you and then having to get out. Is there a concern here for how to bail out? And, you know, we're all flight instructors around the table. If this was your former student, now 107-hour pilot, is like, I'm going to do this, and I heard about the East River route, and I'm going to ask for the East River route. And they say, but I'm really worried about screwing up. Like, what do I do if I screw up, right?
Jeff, there is no crying in aviation. Just carry through. You get the clearance, comply with a clearance, which you ought to be able to do. I mean, they're fairly simple clearances, and don't miss your calls. That's what's going to get you yelled at. If you hear your radio call and you reply, you're good to go.
Mark. There was a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And the theory of the book was, you know, we get to create all these horrible scenarios for ourselves where we're going to do these terrible things and screw up. And if we just go and do it, we find out it's not half as bad as we thought it was. And I think that's true with ATC communications. It's the anticipation that gets people worried. Once you're actually doing it, whether it's a Delta, a Charlie, or a Bravo, you basically listen to what they say, you do what they say, you make the calls, you hear the calls, and it's fine.
You know, one thing you said, Paul, is that, you know, there are other hidden gems out there, and I'll put this on the recording for any of the subscribers. If you've got one that you know, especially if it's an unpublished one, talk about it in the hangar. We'll even maybe open up a separate thread for that, because they are definitely out there. There's a terrific one around Boston, which is really a helicopter tour route. But if you know how to ask for it, they'll let you do it in a small fixed-wing airplane. I'm just curious, with people who've flown in different parts of the country as well, are there any like other favorite routes that are out there?
Yeah, this seems to be a little-known treat down in Florida, but if you ask approach after taking off from, say, Titusville, they'll let you do a low pass over the shuttle landing strip.
This is a different kind of scenario in some ways, because it really is just a planning. There's no, you know, emergency. Nothing's on fire. Nothing's broken. Haven't even taken the flight yet. And there's no real danger. It's all about anxiety. And almost unanimously around the table was, go for it. This is, as Paul said, one of those opportunities to do some of the really exciting things, the reason we want to fly in the first place. And then once you've done it, you can bring someone else along and feel confident about it, and they'll be all psyched about it. I love this route. I've done turns around the Statue of Liberty with permission from New York with my kids when they were young in the back, and they thought it was the best thing in the world. And we've got that forever. But talk to the locals. Find out the things that are published and study them. Find out the things that aren't published and use them if you can. Do what you can to prepare and make it one of the most memorable flights that you have an opportunity to do. And that's, of course, if you're prepared, memorable in a good way as opposed to memorable in a different sort of way.